Welcome to Season 5 of Ye Olde Dragons Library, the storytelling podcast. Each episode this season will be a chapter from the second book in the Enchanted Castle Archives, The Beastly Beauty. In Season 1, our heroine, Ash, was warned multiple times to stay away from the Enchanted Castle, and if she ever saw it coming toward her, to run. Now, she finds the Enchanted Castle, or, perhaps more accurately, it finds her. Will prophecy come true? Can she escape when she finds out the truth of Cecil's warning that every castle wants a princess? Listen and find out. Chapter 10. "Think, you idiot," she whispered, and her voice cracked again. Fang thumped against the basket and her back, accompanied by a plaintive crooning. She understood. He wanted out, and he wanted answers. "In a few minutes, Fang, I need to find a nice shady place to hide. Then I'll let you out. We're in trouble." The crooning rose, higher in pitch and louder, with a few clicks and chirps. She grinned shakily, knowing his response was the equivalent of a sarcastic, "Oh, do you really think so?" She imagined Cecil giving her his narrow-eyed, pursed-lip look of teasing disappointment. It had always helped her relax when she had tied her brain into knots of frustration over a problem she couldn't resolve. "Athiosius, help me clear my mind," she whispered, as she turned the horse and put the stone arch behind her. The forest in front of her looked so warm and bright and inviting. The perfumes of dozens of flowers and the rich sunshine on leaves smell urged her to relax, take off her cloak, let the horse wander as he pleased, maybe find a shady spot to spread a blanket and take a nap. The welcome of the forest could be a trap. What if she gave in and let herself wander and never found her way back to this spot again? "Help," she whispered, half prayer and half scolding. "I need to get back to this spot. If the portals take turns in an orderly fashion, as Philby said, then this is the only way to get back to where I was, even if it isn't the same when that I was. First task, mark this place so she could find it again, yet far enough away from the area affected by the magic that changed the portal, so the marker itself was unaffected. She based her plans on what Philby had told her about the Enchanted Forest. Ash chose to believe there was some order, some rhythm and pattern to the forest, even if it had been knocked off balance and loose of its moorings by whatever knocked the Enchanted Castle loose. This portal would always take her to the same place. She simply needed to wait long enough for it to come around again to that section of forest in Camerlang. "Simply," she muttered, punctuated with a snort. The important thing was to stay close by so she could watch and learn the rhythm and patterns, not go chasing through the forest, looking for every opening that gave a hint, most likely false, of taking her back to where she started. That was always how people in the accounts she had read had lost their minds, visited kingdoms around the world, and lost the people they loved and the lives they had left behind. Several fallen trees a short distance away, partially covered with vines and forest debris, provided what she needed. Ash dismounted and got to work, hauling the larger limbs over to the spot 10 steps away from the stone archway. She set up rough pillars on either side of the opening. The ground was soft enough to dig down more than a foot to set the limbs in. She tied them together at the top with the tough cord from the traveling kit that Philby referred to as possibly useful trash. Ash made a note to let the woman know that, yes, the trash was indeed useful. She spread red ink on the limbs in each bundle, from the small pot included in the kit. Ash wiped her fingers clean on fallen leaves and considered the other items in the kit, wondering when they would prove useful as well. Fang thumped on the basket and chittered impatiently at her. She sighed. "Sorry, we'll get into shade soon." She could have created a temporary shady spot for him by spreading her cloak over some bushes and at least let him out of the basket while she worked. Then Ash looked up at the sky. The task had taken her more than an hour, but the angle of the light through the leaves hadn't changed. Now that she considered her surroundings, there really was no angle of light, was there? She sensed how much time had passed because she had a good inner time sense. Yet, judging by the light of the forest, no time had passed. A shiver crawled down her sweaty back. Someone had told her there was no sun or moon in the enchanted forest. How could she tell direction without the sun's journey across the sky? How could she navigate away from this spot to explore, to find food and shelter, if she couldn't be sure of finding her way back? Asha's hands shook slightly as she tugged on the lid of the compartment in the front of her saddle and pulled out the compass in its padded box embedded in the frame. She had half expected to find the needle spinning wildly, reacting to inimical magic. What else could be affecting the forest but inimical magic? The tiny star in the tip of the longer, wider end of the needle pointed into the forest. Testing, she pulled the compass out of its box and walked across the clearing she had disturbed with her work, shifting her gaze between the needle and the spot it pointed to. Relief slid cool through her innards as the needle adjusted to keep pointing at the same spot. Good, at least she had a sense of north. That was a starting place. With the pillars marking the portal, no matter how much it changed, she had an anchor spot. Now to find a place where Fang could get out of the basket. Even if this place had no sun, the light still burned him. Then she needed to set up a camp, or at the very least make a defensible place, and then forage for food. There was no telling how long she would be here until the portal opened again. Back in the saddle, the height let her detect several trails through the forest, most likely created by animals as they went to either feeding grounds or to water. Ash said a silent prayer for water and guided Garen down the widest and straightest trail. The sounds of birdsong and the rustling of tree creatures filtered through the whisper of the breeze among the branches and leaves. It made a comforting music at the back of her mind, assuring her nothing large and dangerous was nearby. Silence suddenly falling around her meant danger approaching. The trees parted ahead of her, with a sparkle of what had to be sunlight on water. Then the sound of water flowing over rocks reached her ears. The horse's ears flicked forward, and he picked up the pace. The underbrush grew thinner, and the trees sparser with every few steps down the trail, until they emerged into a clearing that crossed a shallow stream. Not too shallow for fish to live in it. Dark shapes wriggled through the soft light and shadows dappling the water. The smallest was as long as her hand, the largest the length of her arm. Fresh fish, cooked over a campfire, would be a welcome break from salted and dried provisions, washed down with weak wine, or the always fresh water from that miraculous water skin Blaz had given her. Dismounting, Ash looked back the way she had come. The animal trail was nearly straight, which sent a prickle of unease up her back. Animals simply didn't walk in straight lines. Had this perhaps been made by people at one time, and the animals simply kept it open because it was easy to follow? What mattered was that she could see all the way to that arch of stone, and even some of the red ink she had smeared on the markers she had created. Good. She could keep an eye on the portal and note how long it remained in that form. Fang thumped on the basket, hard enough to make it rock against the leather straps holding it in place. Loud sighs and groans followed. "As soon as I have a shelter put together, you can come out," she promised him. "How good are you at fishing?" That got a few curious chirps from him. Ash laughed. Nothing like a challenge and fresh food to get Fang's interest and raise his spirits. She studied the clear space between the underbrush and the stream, trying to pick a good camping spot without having to leave the line of sight of the portal. The grass gave way to mossy growth in an almost clear line. Suspicious, she dug with the heel of her boot and found a layer of what looked like sand over smooth rock. Following the line of the slope down to the stream with her eyes, Ash guessed that at one time this had been a river, much wider and higher. She hoped she was right, that the moss covering the ground for more than 2 horse lengths meant chances of sudden floods were small, and she could camp safely here, at least until there was a torrential downpour. Did it rain in the Enchanted Forest? The ring would know. She couldn't ask him, though, could she? Ash mentally slapped herself for that bit of laziness, assuming she would always have the ring to fill in the information she needed. She had written notes about the enchanted forest in that wondrous journal that let her write as much as she wanted, without running out of blank pages. The question was if she had written enough of the right information. "Well, if I manage to make a fire, that's what I'll be doing before I go to sleep. Reading. Learning. Athiosius, help me. Give me wisdom. Keep us safe," she ended on a whisper. She saw a clump of what she hoped were berry bushes, hanging over the stream where the bank seemed to rise up higher than her head. A dozen steps took her close enough to see the bank of the stream curved out a little ways, and her angle changed. That wasn't entirely a massive clump of bushes, full of jewel-like clusters of blue-black berries. They grew over a hunched outcropping of rock, and a dark space underneath was where the river, when it was 3 horse lengths wider, had carved out the bank. Ash's heart skipped a few beats as she envisioned a snug camp, tucked up under that rock, giving her a place to put her back to if danger approached, and plenty of shade for Fang to stretch out in. She looked back to where she had left Garen. That was a short enough walk back to where she could see the portal, wasn't it? Common sense said not to walk down that trail to the portal in the dark, anyway, if it ever got dark. "Please, Athiosius, some darkness, just so Fang can hunt and explore? And I'll need sleep eventually, but it's hard to sleep in daylight." She sighed and looked upward at the perfect sky, that pale blue with only a few streaks of clouds that could never turn to rain, and far-off dots of what she hoped were birds. Ordinary birds. If birds that lived in the enchanted forest could ever be ordinary. Complaining and whining were bad for the beginning of however long she stayed here. Ash told herself to be grateful for what she had. She needed to set up camp and get to work studying. Fang chirped his thanks when she set the basket down in the shade of the overhang and opened the lid. He jumped out, nearly hitting his head, and crouched at the edge of the shadow. Ash tried to understand how, with no visible sun, there could be shadows. It made her head hurt after only a few minutes, so she gave up. Something she could do, though. She hung her cloak on the berry bushes hanging off one side of the outcropping, creating more shadow, widening the space where Fang was safe. He crooned and moved to the new edge of shadow and leaned out, studying the stream and the length of the bank, until faint steam rose from the tips of his ears. Ash was busy unsettling Garen and figuring out how to pick at him. The moss and sand were too shallow to drive a stake into the ground. She shoved her saddlebags into the shade with her foot and resorted to tangling the reins with the berry bush dripping over the front lip of the overhang. She pulled the altered shirt out of the bottom of her saddlebag and held it up, silently asking Fang if he wanted to resort to it. He studied it for a moment, then seemed to wilt a little, sighed loudly, and hopped over to where she sat. In a moment, he was covered, with the tail of the shirt dragging on the moss and sand. His ears twitched as she slipped the sleeves over them. Ash pitied Fang and his mangled dignity, having to resort to her old shirt to protect him from the light. Until night fell, if it ever fell, he either had to hide in the shade of the rock or suffer some indignity to be able to move freely. His injured pride made him a zealous fisherman, although he seemed to do 10 times as much splashing as he did catching. By the time Ash had found a stick long enough and thick enough to serve as a fishing spear, he had caught 2 fish, snapping their spines with one bite of his massive teeth and shaking them back and forth in his mouth as he hopped up to their campsite to deposit them. She waded out, barefoot, her trousers rolled up to her knees, to what seemed like the middle of the stream. It rose barely to her knees. Then she stood still, as the older servant boys had taught the younger children at Fairhold, until the fish grew used to the presence of her legs in the water and swam near again. The water was pleasantly cold, the air pleasantly warm, and Ash played with the idea of staying here indefinitely. Not because the portal never opened again to that tunnel of roses and snow, but because she chose to. She would be safe from Lathia's magicians, wouldn't she? But how would she find help to regain the ring, free him from whatever kept him silent and perhaps blind and deaf. Cecil and Philby might have answers in their books, or at least know where to look, where to go to find those answers. She hoped they wouldn't have to depend on the Enchanter's council or even the court for help. Ash grew busy with considering her options, scolding herself for giving in to the longing to just find some place safe to rest. She nearly didn't see the fish that circled her legs. She waited until the longest, fattest fish came close enough to brush its tail against her ankles 3 times. Then she plunged the spear down. She was as startled as the fish when she succeeded on the first try. Wading back to the bank would mean wading back out, and wading again until the water calmed and the fish returned. Could she throw the fish that far to reach the bank? More important, could she trust Fang not to eat that fish while she waited to spear another? She resorted to tucking the dying fish into her belt, though it dripped down her trousers and wriggled uncomfortably against her ribs. Next time, Ash promised herself, she would have a bag, or maybe a basket that floated on the water, to put her catch in until she had caught enough. She glanced back at the camp. Fang was down at the water's edge now, splashing in the water. She saw no sign of the fish he had caught, and again, nearly missed the fish that circled her ankles in curiosity. This one wasn't quite as large as the first, but they would make dinner and a satisfying breakfast, if Fang didn't get hungry in the night and take the leftovers. This fish took 3 stabs, but she got him, and waded back to the bank with the spear raised high, the fish wriggling, and the one in her belt giving feeble, writhing death throes. She wisely wrapped the fish in her saddle blanket to protect them. Fang was sniffing at them when she came back with an armload of branches to make a fire. She glared at him, and he didn't even try to look guilty as he hopped away, back to the water's edge to resume fishing. The first tenuous flames of the fire drew her attention to the sky. Ash sat back on her heels and caught her breath in wonder at the streaks of purple and pink and gold that seemed to push the blue from the sky. So this was what sunset looked like when there was no sun. "Night does come here," she whispered, and grinned. "Thank you, Athiosius. Thank you, I didn't waste time. Thank you for food and shelter. Please help me find my way out of here, soon." Then she got to work building up the fire and cleaning the fish to cook. A splash, and then the sounds of struggle showed Fang's success. She had her fish in a long green stick, bobbing slightly over the fire, when he returned to sit in the growing shadows and nibble at his catch. When the first star twinkled to life in the deepest purple of the night sky, directly overhead, Fang hopped over to Ash and pawed at his covered ears. She put aside the half-eaten fish on a platter of enormous leaves and helped him remove the shirt. Then he vanished like a shot into the darkness, the sounds of his feet splatting on the moss fading in mere heartbeats. She read until the last of her sticks went on the fire, then made a torch and walked up to the edge of the underbrush to gather more firewood. This time she made 3 trips, to hopefully get through the night without having to leave the fire again. Garin was calm, and she trusted him to act as her sentinel. Ash tried not to grumble, even if silently, about the lack of the ring to help her, as guard and as provider of light, and most importantly, as teacher. How was she going to deal with this unwanted stay in the Enchanted Forest? "Visit," she corrected herself a moment later. She did not want to stay. She refused to stay. This was a visit, a short one, nothing more. Ash read through her journal full of notes until her eyes blurred. She realized that making the fire bright enough for reading meant burning the wood quickly, meaning more trips to the forest to gather wood. She put her journal away and spread her blankets beside the fire and lay where she could look beyond the fire, up at the sky. She had made notes on navigating by the stars and tried to determine where the forest might be in its wandering by looking for familiar constellations. After another hour, Ash couldn't find anything familiar in the sky above her. She was ready to close her eyes and try to sleep when a new thought struck her. Had those stars moved at all since night fell? Stars were supposed to move in the night sky, just like the moon moved and the sun moved. Even if there were no sun and moon here in the Enchanted Forest, shouldn't the stars move? I'm going to think myself into headaches worse than Cecil had with visions, she whispered. The horse snorted in response, and she sighed laughter. She was still awake, feeling the first tendrils of drowsiness, when Fang returned to the camp. He had something clutched to his chest, and for a moment she feared he had been wounded. He had something clutched in his teeth as well. He spread his arms, and the dark spots resolved into four apples, a deep ruby shade, small enough for perhaps four bites each. He opened his mouth and dropped a small knife next to the fire. It glinted gold with blue and green sparkles. Ash's fingertips tingled when she picked it up. Were those chips of jewels in the hilt? Well, and where did you come from? Fang, please tell me you didn't steal this from some other trapped traveler. No, he rescued me, a sweet metallic voice whispered in her head. I was stolen from my home and dropped when the thief fled. Please, take me home, and there will be great rewards. Ash put the little knife down on one of the rocks that ringed her fire when she wanted to fling it away. The reaction was ridiculous, she knew, because she hadn't been afraid when the ring first spoke to her. Then again, she knew the ring was magic before she picked it up. She didn't expect a pretty gold knife dusted with sapphire and emerald chips to talk to her. The knife seesawed twice on the uneven rock where she had put it. Not wise to irritate magical objects. Where is your home? Ash knew from far too many stories that asking about a reward was the wrong question. She would look greedy. And besides, in several stories, the rewards were never promised to the hapless hero or the fool who happened to find the magical talking beast or object. The rewards were for the lost or stolen creature or item that lured another victim into a trap. No answer. Fang, did the knife talk to you? He nodded. Knife, why won't you speak to me? She swallowed. Did I hurt your feelings? Logic provided the answer. Sighing, she picked up the knife. I'm sorry, knife. Do I have to touch you to hear you? That's quite all right, the knife said, sounding a little too cheerful for Ash's tastes. You don't understand much about magic, do you? We can help with that. Who are we, and where is your home? Ash caught herself hunching her shoulders in anticipation of the answer. The castle! And we are all the many lost and escaped magical treasures and tools that have gathered there over the decades. Ash fought down a whimper. That confirmed what she had tried not to admit, tried not to even think about for the last few hours. If she was in the enchanted forest, then the enchanted castle was somewhere nearby. After all the warnings she had received, all the things she had read about the castle, whether they were mere fables or truth, she knew better than to blithely walk through the main gates of the castle and expect to walk out again without any trouble or struggle. She also knew better than to deny the knife's request for help getting home, even if this was a trap. Or, more accurately, especially if this was a trap. She needed to be as kind and generous and honorable and clever as all the heroes she had read about. We hope you enjoyed today's chapter. For more information on all the books and series featured in this podcast, or to purchase the ebook or audiobook for future reading and listening pleasure, please visit yeolddragonbooks.com. You can also find more information about our books and purchase ebooks on our Patreon page, Ye Old Dragons Library. Please consider supporting the podcast to gain access to free stories or discounts, or a chance to purchase a new book in advance of release. Thanks for listening to this episode of Ye Old Dragons Library.